19, 9 and 10. And Jesus said unto him, This day is salvation come to this house, for much as he is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man is come to seek and to save that which was lost. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
It's good to see each and every one of you. If you're visiting with us, we're very honored that you come our way. We want you to know that you are certainly honored, and we want to know you to know that you are our welcome guest, and we want you to come back at each and every opportunity that you have. We're so thankful to have you this morning. We're so thankful for those that help us serve. We're so thankful for the song reading, the scripture reading, the prayer. Always thankful for those, and thankful for our Bible class teachers. Always keep those in mind that are serving in those ways, and all those that are serving behind the scenes. We're so thankful for everything that everyone does here at Sandyville. Our Tuesday class will start, I believe, next week, and we'll be going into Amos. It is election day, but I plan on having the class, try to early vote, I guess, or just make arrangements. But I plan on having class unless I hear otherwise for that Tuesday class next week, Tuesday. And also, please keep the Garrett family in your prayers. I know that they're going through some things. Just keep them in mind, and certainly in your prayers. Certainly. You know, Jesus had a mission. I think we get a little piece of it here in Luke chapter 19, which was just read for us. The idea that the Son of Man has come to seek and to save that which was lost. And certainly, if we're going to try to align ourselves with Jesus' mission, we should try to keep these things, I think, on our mind. You know, I always set goals for the year. And it seems weird to be talking about goals in October, but my goals are on my mind because I've tried to finish some of those off. And I try not to forget my goals. I try to write them down. I try to think about them. I've got spiritual goals. I've got physical goals. I've got goals in different areas. And most of my goals I try to direct towards myself because I know that really, truly, there's many things that are out of my control, but I can't control myself. And I try to improve myself. I try to be better each and every day. I'm certainly thankful for your patience as I try to grow as a preacher and as a Christian with you here at Sandyville. But I make goals. And I don't know if you've ever heard of Parkinson's Law. The Parkinson's Law basically states that a job will expand to fill the time that you have to do the job. So if you think, I've got an hour to clean the house, guess what? It'll take an hour to clean the house. But if you have perhaps half an hour to clean the house, perhaps you can get it done in half an hour. But Parkinson says if you've got a lot of time, if you've got jobs that you need to be done, it's magic, they'll fill up that time. Well, time is closing on this year. Time is closing on this year. After this Sunday, we'll have about 2 months left. You know, I don't know if you'll be able to remember, but can you go back to the beginning of the year? Did you set some goals? Because I'm thinking about some of my goals in Parkinson's Law. I've got about 2 months to wrap up some of these goals. And I usually hit about 80% of my goals. I think that's pretty good because I think if I accomplish all my goals, perhaps I set them too low. But I'm really thinking about those goals. I'm thinking about I've got 2 months left to try to wrap up some of these goals. And I've got some spiritual goals. And some goals that are individual to me, as I think and I consider as the year comes to a close. But have you thought about some of your spiritual goals? Surely, if we're thinking about some of the spiritual goals we set at the beginning of the year, hopefully some of those were in relation to seeking and saving that which is lost. And I know that we don't have control over other individuals, but we do have control over ourselves. And we do see some things that Jesus does here in Luke chapter 19 that I believe we can all do. We can all do these things. And certainly as the year comes to a close, as we have 2 months left, perhaps we can put some of these things into our hearts and our minds as we pursue the same goal that Jesus had, to seek and save that which is lost. Let's look at chapter 19. We're going to see a gentleman, Zacchaeus, and I'm going to read the first four verses and just try to give us the setting before we get into the point that I want to throw out in verse 5. It says, Then Jesus entered and passed through Jericho. Now behold, there was a man named Zacchaeus who was his chief tax collector, and he was rich, and he sought to see Jesus, see who Jesus was, but could not because of the crowd. for he was of short stature. So he ran ahead and climbed up into a sycamore tree to see him, for he was going to pass that way. In the first four verses here, we see the setting. We see the setting of Zacchaeus at the city of Jericho. And we remember Jericho goes all the way back to Joshua, about 15 miles outside of Jerusalem, a city that's been around for certainly a long, long time. And that's our setting is Jericho. And we see that Zacchaeus desires to see Jesus. He desired to see him. And I think there's a lot to be said for that. Is that I think Zacchaeus was a seeker within himself. And perhaps he wasn't expecting what Jesus was going to do that day, but he was seeking. And I think that can't be understated, and seeking is so important. It's important for us as we seek the lost, but I think it's important for the lost to seek the truth as well. But what can we control? We can control seeking the lost. You know, I think Zacchaeus knew he was going to run into some difficulty that day. He thought he was going to run into some adversity that day. He thought it might be hard for him to see Jesus. So he actually climbs up in a tree, and we see that he's a short stature, and we see a description of Zacchaeus. But there's something to be said for seeking. There's something to be said for Zacchaeus seeking to see Jesus, but there's also something to be said that I believe that Jesus is going to show that he was seeking Zacchaeus that day as well. To see. You know, that's an action word, is it not? It's hard to start thinking about that word seek and not associate it with some action. If I'm seeking my keys, if I'm seeking to find my keys, that has some action to it. If I'm seeking something, that has some action. We can see that Zacchaeus has some seeking action. We're going to see that Jesus has some seeking action in relation to Zacchaeus. Is there something to be said about seeking, that action? Are you seeking God? That's what Zacchaeus was trying to do. He's trying to seek God. But on the other side, we have a Jesus who's trying to seek the lost. And certainly both those are very, very important. A lot of people try to get a picture of Jesus today, but they try to do it without their Bible. If you want to get a good picture of Jesus, you need to seek him in the Bible. Let's look at Luke chapter 19 and verse 5. We've got a little bit of background, but really this verse is our focus verse. It says, when Jesus came to this place, he looked up and saw him and said to him, Zacchaeus, make haste and come down, for today I must stay at your house. The first thing I see and I recognize is that Jesus could see the law, and also Jesus could see an opportunity. And when I think about that, do we see the lost in our lives? You know, I think if we really put that to heart, we realize how many lost individuals are around us, how many people need the truth, how many people need the gospel. Can we see as Jesus sees? Can we look around and see the lost in our lives, and that can touch us with the compassion? And just as I believe it touched Jesus throughout his life, he had compassion for these individuals, and he was doing the best he could to seek these individuals and reach out. But there's something to be said for looking for the lost, to see the lost. And Jesus saw Zacchaeus that day. He saw Zacchaeus. And I think also Jesus saw an opportunity, and I would suggest to you that he makes an opportunity. Can you see the lost in your life? Can you see them? Because if you don't see them, you're probably not going to make any movement towards them in terms of trying to be evangelistic. Can you see the lost in your life? Can you see opportunities in your life to reach out to these individuals? Can you see? What did Jesus see that day? Jesus is walking through Jericho, and it seems like there's a crowd, and he looks up. He sees Zacchaeus in this tree. He's looking, I believe, for the lost. I believe Jesus is looking for an opportunity. Do we do that in our lives? Can we look at ourselves honestly? What did Jesus see that day that stopped him in his tracks? You know, I think in the Old Testament, we have Samuel, and Samuel shows up to Jesse's house. And Jesse has a lot of sons. Of course, one of his sons is David, which is going to be one of the kings of Israel. He's going to be one of the kings of the Old Testament. But Samuel shows up to Jesse's house in 1 Samuel chapter 16, and he starts going through all these sons, and he's like, surely this son is the king. Look at his physical factor. Look at his attributes. This must be the next king. And God keeps telling Samuel, no, 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 no. But I think the 1 Samuel chapter 16 and verse 7 says, but the Lord said to Samuel, do not look at his appearance or at his physical stature, because I have refused him. He's talking about the other brothers. For the Lord does not see as man sees, for man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. Do we see the way that Jesus sees? I think every time that Jesus saw a set of eyeballs, he saw a soul. And the question is will we see the same way that Jesus sees? Is that will we look beyond the physical? Will we look at those eyes and see a soul? Jesus saw a soul that day. Can we see a soul? Can we see an opportunity to spread the word of God? Do we see as God sees? You know, if you use your physical eyes, what would you see about that here? You see a short man. You see a rich man. You see a tax collector. And actually, when you look at that profile, you might say, this person is not really a candidate to be a follower of God. When you think about it, here's a rich individual, an individual that has probably cheated people in his life, which we're going to see that when he becomes a follower of God. He says he's going to try to make those things right. But if you were just to look at Zacchaeus, and you were just to look at his physical appearance, you wouldn't say, oh, this is perhaps Christian material. This is a follower of Jesus material. He's a rich man. He's a short man. And you look at those things. Do we see as Jesus sees? Jesus sees souls. And when he looked up into that tree, that's what he saw that day. And what he wants us to see every day of our lives, he wants us to see the souls that are around us. Do we see as Jesus sees? The Lord does not see as man sees. He looks at not at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. Do we look at the heart? Do we look at the souls of the individuals that are around us? The first step, I think, when it comes to evangelism in our lives, is we have to see the lost that are around us. And certainly Jesus demonstrates that on this day. If you use your worldly eyes, you might see a tax collector, you might see a rich man, you might see an individual that doesn't look like they would be interested in God's word. But Jesus approaches all the same. And many times, I look at this throughout Jesus' ministry, as we look throughout the gospel, there's many individuals that I fear that we would not approach, that we would not engage, that we wouldn't even see as a candidate to be a follower of God. I think of John chapter 4. In John chapter 4, who does Jesus run into? He runs into the Samaritan woman. And really, if you think about this woman, she's probably got about 3 strikes against her, doesn't she? 1, she's a woman. 2, she's a Samaritan. And 3, she's been married 5 times, I believe, if you look at John chapter 4. Somebody that probably would say, this isn't a candidate to be a follower of God, but that's Jesus approaches. Jesus starts the conversation that I can give you living water, and he goes through that. Many people do mark off our list to talk to because we don't see as Jesus sees. Will we mark off Matthew the tax collector? Will we mark off Zacchaeus the tax collector? Will we mark off the Samaritan woman? She's a Samaritan, she's a woman, and then she's got all this stuff that's going on in her personal life. Would we write off people that Jesus would not write off? You know, I think of Saul, right? Saul persecuting the church, doing everything he can. He's at he's there at Stephen's stoning, and he's persecuting the church and doing all these things. But Jesus does not write Saul off. Saul becoming Paul. Do you see as Jesus sees? When you walk through your life, when you walk through school, when you walk through your job, when you walk through the store, when you walk through the community, can you see the lost? Because when Jesus walked through, he would see. Not only would he see the souls that were around him, but he would also see the opportunity. You know, we're so fortunate that the apostles, I don't believe, carried this attitude when they were spreading the gospel at the beginning of the church. Now, I'm not saying we don't see struggles with them from time to time. But I think it is a Christian attribute, it's a Jesus attribute, to not overlook people. That we look at each and every individual. You look them in the eyes, you see the soul, and we acknowledge that we have an opportunity to make a difference in these individuals' lives. Can you see those that are around you? In Acts chapter 8, verse 4, it says, therefore, those who were scattered went everywhere preaching the word. I don't believe that they were selected. And I know that we're imperfect, but Jesus is looking for those. He's looking for souls. What did Jesus see that day? He saw a soul. Can we see the same thing when we walk around where we live? Can we see a human made in the image of God with an eternal soul that will go throughout eternity? Jesus was interested, was he not? Jesus was interested in the law. In fact, I think he really gives a nice summary of his mission in Luke chapter 19 and verse 10, right where we're at. For the Son of Man has come to seek and to save that which was lost. A nice mission statement right there. And the question for us is, do we carry the same mission statement as Jesus, to seek and to save that which is lost? Jesus would preach to the multitudes. He would preach to individuals one-on-one. In fact, you might even argue that many times in our lives we're more effective one-on-one. It's always looking for these opportunities. And in fact, on this day, I almost think that Jesus makes an opportunity, does he not? He pulls that Zacchaeus right out of the tree. You know, I pray that I see opportunities in my life. But I think maybe I've cut myself short. Maybe we need to make opportunities. Maybe we need to make opportunities. Because how many of us would have pulled Zacchaeus out of that tree? He's walking. It appears that there's a crowd. The Bible says that there's a crowd. Zacchaeus is in the tree for a reason, because there's a crowd. And Jesus, as he is surrounded by these individuals, could Jesus perhaps say, you know what, I want to get away from this crowd. I want to kind of get into a house and then people can come to me. No, he sees the opportunity, and perhaps he goes further than that. He makes an opportunity, says, hey, Zacchaeus, I'm going to show up to your house. He extends the invitation. Can you see the law? Can you see the opportunity? Perhaps we need to look at ourselves and say, are we making the opportunities that we should? In fact, we think of Matthew chapter 28. As we see the Great Commission, go into all the world and preach the gospel. He who believes and is baptized shall be saved. Have you thought about your contacts in your business or at work? Have you thought about your contacts when you go to school, when you go to college, or even high school, or wherever you find yourself at college? Are you looking and seeing what Jesus sees? Are you seeking what Jesus was seeking? Couldn't we summarize that as a mission statement of Jesus to seek and to save that which is lost? And I think that's a question for us. If we're going to do that, we're going to have to see like Jesus was able to see. And he could see souls, and he could see opportunities. And he saw opportunities at weird spots sometimes. There's a woman at a well. I'd like a drink. Oh, did you know that I can give you living water? He kind of almost made that out of nothing, you know? A drink of water into a spiritual application. Jesus was very good at that. He's very good at catching people's interest, using things in the world that were going on and saying, hey, there's a spiritual connection to this. Can you do that in your life? See an opportunity, make an opportunity, say, hey, we're doing this. You know, this ties to the Bible. This connects to the Bible. Did you know that? You know, you might be the only person to make a difference in certain individuals' lives. And I think many times, not that I am not willing to help and assist in any way, but I think sometimes, you know, Christians will put a preacher on a pedestal, but I'm just like you. Just like you. Just like you. But you realize that you have personal rapport and connections with people that I don't have personal rapport and connections with. But sometimes people want to bring me into the conversation, and it's not that I don't want to be in the conversation, but do you understand the connection that you have? Do you understand the rapport that you have with that individual? Do you understand the connection that you have? I don't have the connection that you have. I don't have the rapport that you have. You are the one many times that can make a difference, the one that can see that lost soul, and you have an opportunity to bring that lost soul to Christ. It's not that I don't want to be involved. I do want to be involved, so don't cut yourself short. You're going to have opportunities as Jesus had to see lost souls and to see opportunities and make opportunities for those lost individuals that are around you. You know, I think Satan, one of the things that he tries to do is try to blind people. And in 2 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 4, it says, whose minds the God of this age has blinded, who do not believe, lest the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine on them. This idea in 2 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 4 is that Satan is trying to blind individuals to the light of the gospel. He doesn't want people to see the light of the gospel, and I think that Satan works on us as well. Satan doesn't want us to look up in the tree. He doesn't want us to see the lost and dying world around us, because if we see the lost and dying world, we might act, and we might talk and take opportunities that we have to engage with those individuals. Satan's in the blinding business. He doesn't want people to see the gospel. He doesn't want you to see the lost. He doesn't want you to see. But what did Jesus do that's so simple on this day? He sees those that need the gospel around him. Can we see that as well? When was the last time that you were seeking a lost person? Now, many times people handle this in generality. Many times they handle this in generality. They say, well, you know, as I go throughout my life, I am trying to do this. But when I think of seek, when I think of seeking a lost coin, or when I think of seeking a seat that's lost, or when I think about this, is it very deliberate, is it not? If I'm seeking my keys, that's very deliberate. If I'm seeking a lost coin, that's very deliberate. And I think sometimes in our Christianity, we have to say, I have a target today. I have a target this month. I have a target to the end of the year. I've got someone on my mind that I see that's lost. And I see them, and I am going to pray about them. I am going to try to develop a better relationship with them. And I am going to try to cross that barrier where I invite them just as Jesus did. Do you have a target? It's hard to seek something. Sometimes it doesn't have a name. Well, I'm seeking something out there. What are you seeking, Kyle? You got some names? Some people that are on your mind that you can see. That Satan has not blinded you to, that you can see and you want to go after and pursue. Have you targeted someone? Have you thought about opportunities that you might have? Can you make opportunities? Number one, I see that Jesus was full of that kid. And it might be a small thing, but there is a big crowd, there's a lot of things going on. Jesus is very busy, but he could see the lost. And we need to see the lost as well. Number two is that Jesus stopped. Now, I don't know if this is significant to you or not, but this is significant to me, that Jesus stopped. The Son of God stopped. Wait. The Son of God stopped. That's significant to me. And when I see Jesus stop in the Bible, I just can't help but stop as well and say, what stopped the Son of God? I can tell you what stopped the Son of God. Souls. Souls stopped Jesus again and again and again. I believe also you could say, what could stop Jesus? Perhaps a word from God, the Father, perhaps that could stop Jesus. But when I think about that, what stopped Jesus more times than anything else in his life? Souls. That's what stopped Jesus. You think about that. If Jesus was willing to invest time in Zacchaeus, and I suspect there's lots of people that you could stop and make an investment in. It could be compassion. It could be benevolence. It could be kindness. It could be trying to expose them to the Word of God. It could be asking them a question. There's a lot of ways that we could certainly stop. But Jesus paused and he looked up in the tree. That's significant to me. Not only could he see, but he stopped. Because sometimes we see and we don't stop, do we? We see, but we don't stop. Jesus was able to see opportunities and he was able to stop. The Son of God was willing to stop. He was willing to take the time. He's willing to go to Zacchaeus' house. He's willing to invest time. He stopped and he looked up. He said, well, Kyle, I'm busy. I think Jesus is busy too. Because when he starts his ministry, he only has about 3.5 years, give or take. Jesus is a busy, busy God. So the question is why did Jesus stop? He stopped because it was in line with his mission. It was in line with his priorities. What was Jesus' priority? To seek and save that which is lost. And the question is, if we're going to follow Jesus, do we have that same high priority? To seek and save that which is lost. If you're going to seek and save that which is lost, you're going to have to stop from time to time. And that's going to be hard. And you might even say, I'm busy. I know you're busy. Jesus was busy. But that was his number one priority. Will you stop for those that are lost, the ones that need it? You know, if you want Sandyville to be successful, the congregation here at Sandyville, which you are a part, you're going to have to stop your busy life and show compassion. You're going to have to stop your busy life and show interest. You're going to have to stop your busy life and show concern. You're going to have to stop your busy life and invest. And without your investment, without you stopping, Sandyville will not be successful. The Lord's church will not be successful. We need you desperately. We need your peace. We need you to do these things that Jesus is doing, seeing the law, but also stopping for the law. So let me give you a little secret that I've learned in my life, which is very hard for me to learn. Is life never stops, does it? When Jesus invades Zacchaeus, does Jesus hit the pause button and all the rest of the world around him stop? No, life continues on. But see, what Jesus does is he stops for the important thing. I don't know about you, but I have a to-do list. I came to the conclusion I'm never going to beat that to-do list, am I? There's always going to be more diapers to change. There's always going to be more dishes to clean. There's always going to be more of this, more of that. There's always going to be more work. There's always going to be more in your life. Your to-do list will never be achieved. Do you understand that? You will not have enough time. Places you want to go, you will not be able to go to all those places. Things you want to do, you won't be able to do all those things. So what's the trick to life? Do the most important thing. And that's the hard thing. Is do the most important thing. You try to have a set amount of time of life. There's only so much you can fit into that life. The trick is putting the most important things in that life. Because you will never get to the bottom of that to-do list.
You won't.
I've tried. I'm like, yes, I made it. Oh, no, next week comes and that to-do list just fills up again. So the trick to life is to fill it up with the most important things. And why Jesus didn't have any issues stopping here for Zacchaeus. The reason he had no issues stopping is because it was aligned with his mission and he knew it was important. He knew he must stop. He knew he must extend this invitation to Zacchaeus. We'll never get to the bottom of our to-do list. We can't do it all, but we can do the most important things in this life. You know, it's funny how we come up with so many excuses when it comes to seeking and saving the lost or just being a Christian in general. You know, many times we say, well, I'm too young to serve the Lord. And sometimes people say, I'm too old to serve the Lord. Sometimes they say, well, I get busy in the middle. I don't have time to serve the Lord. You've got to make time because it's the most important thing. It's the most important thing. And it's so interesting because in this life, Satan works on it so hard to try to flip-flop this, doesn't he? I know many people that are quick church, but they won't quit on the world, will they? They'll keep the world on their to-do list, but they won't put Jesus on the to-do list. Couldn't Jesus be up at the top of the to-do list? It's like, if I'm going to accomplish anything in my life, Jesus is going to be at the top of the to-do list. That seeking and saving the lost has got to be up there at the top. It can't be at the bottom, because if it's at the bottom, I'll tell you what will happen. It'll never happen. Because you run out of time. And perhaps that's what the devil wants the most, is he wants us to run out of time. Will you stop? I know we live in a busy world. I know we have busy lives. There's no doubt about that. Can you stop and look around? Someone needs Christ. Someone needs the gospel. If I don't stop, if I don't look, if I don't stop, if I don't speak, perhaps those individuals around me won't get to hear what they need to hear. When you start looking for souls, when you start looking for opportunities, they need the most important message. Will you stop for the Samaritan woman? Will you stop for Zacchaeus, the tax collector? Will you stop for those in your lives that need to be stopped for? How many people have you stopped for this year? They say, Kyle, I don't know if I want to put a number on it. I heard a businessman say one time, he said, what gets measured gets accomplished. Something to think about. What gets measured gets accomplished. How many people have you stopped for this year? That's a question for you. That's a question for you to think about. And it's a question that you should think about in relation to where did you start the year at and where are you going to end the year at. And what I'm saying is you got 2 months left to still make a difference in this year. You got some people that you can see. There's some people that you can stop for this year before the year comes to a close. That you can try to fulfill the mission which Jesus has laid before himself and laid before us. Will you see? Will you stop? Will you try to make a difference in these people's lives? Could you put a number on it? How many people will you stop for this year? Try to have studies with. Try to offer them an invitation to come to services. Try to do a good deed. Have you stopped this year? You know, Jesus stopped on many occasions. In Luke chapter 18, he actually stopped. There's a man there who's blind. He's crying out. Luke chapter 18 and verse 37, a blind man, he's crying out. He's crying out. And the people around him say, hey, be quiet. Stop yelling at Stop yelling about. And when you get down to Luke chapter 18 and verse 40, it says that, so Jesus stood still and commanded him to be brought to him. That idea of Jesus stopping is a powerful view to me. When Jesus stopped, I try to stop. And Jesus stopped for souls. And certainly we should do that in our lives to the best of our ability. Jesus stood still. It's not that life stood still. Jesus chose to stand still and make sure that the most important things were addressed. Why did he stop? Because it was aligned with his mission. Are you aligned with Jesus' mission? To seek and save that which is lost. You know, I've been involved with different conversions, you know, over the years. One thing I have found is that conversions take time. A lot of time we want it to be very fast. And we do see some fast conversions in the Bible, but I would suggest to you the fast conversions that you see in the Bible are people that don't have religious baggage. Is they're basically coming to Jesus and they almost have no religion at all or no background. And they hear what Jesus says and they're baptized. And I think we even see this in the world today. If you go over to Africa, they have great success preaching the gospel. It only takes a few hours for people to walk through the gospel, see what happens, see that these individuals are being baptized, committing their sins, and it does not take that long. But in our culture, in America, a lot of people do have religious baggage, and it does take time. It takes time to teach them to drop some of these bags. To drop the bags of worldliness. To drop the bags of man-made doctrine. It takes some time for them to drop those things. But you know what? You'll have to stop for those people and take some time. Number one, Jesus sees. He sees the soul. He sees the opportunity. But also, he stops. And that's significant. That cannot be overlooked. And thirdly, he sees. Now, let me ask you this. If Jesus sees the lost, he stops for the lost, but he doesn't speak to them. That doesn't make much good, does it? You know, sometimes people think they're doing a lot of good by stopping for the lost, but they don't speak to them. And I'm just trying to push you and encourage you this day to do what Jesus did. What did Jesus do? Listen, when Jesus came to the place, he looked up and saw him and said to him, Zacchaeus, make haste and come down, for today I must stay at your house. That phrasing is so interesting, because within that phrase, we see an invitation. Not only do we see an invitation, but I almost think we see Jesus making an opportunity. What does Jesus say? He says, today I must stay at your house. You ever thought about that? I must stay at your house. I must talk to you about this. I must have a Bible study. You say that's a little too pushy. Maybe Jesus was. Perhaps we need to be a little pushy. You know? Because Zacchaeus was lost in the tree, and he's lost after Jesus offers this invitation. Zacchaeus has got to accept that invitation. We've got to do the best we can. But have you asked, I don't think it necessarily applies, but I really like the phrasing. In James chapter 4 and verse 2, it says, perhaps we have not because we ask not. Perhaps we have not because we ask not. And I'm not saying it's necessarily a direct application here, but that's an interesting phrase. Perhaps we have not because we ask not. And I think there's a principle there. What happens if Jesus sees Zacchaeus in the tree? He stops for Zacchaeus, but he doesn't say anything, and he just continues on. He doesn't speak to him. Perhaps we have not because we ask not. You know, I think we find that principle in the Bible. In Matthew chapter 7, verses 7 through 8, it says, ask, and it will be given to you. Seek, and you will find. Knock, and it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks, receives. And he who seeks, finds. And to him who knocks, the door will be opened. I think there's a powerful principle there. And the powerful principle is you don't get number 2 without number 1. What are you talking about? Matthew chapter 7, verses 7 and 8. You don't get number 2 without number 1. Well, what are you talking about? You're not going to receive if you don't ask, right? What are the odds of you receiving things many times? I'm not saying it's impossible. But what are the odds of you receiving something if you haven't asked for it? I'd say the odds are low. That's a principle in life. You know another principle? What's the odds of you finding something if you're not seeking it? About zero. About zero. If you're not going to find something that you're not seeking for. And then also it says, if you're not knocking, then the door is probably not going to be open. How many doors have been opened by not knocking? You think about that. I start walking through Sandyville, or just through Ripley, or anywhere, and I just walk through town and expect doors to be open. No door is going to be open unless there's some knocking that happens. There's a principle there in Matthew chapter 7, verses 7 and 8. You know, there's nothing that's going to be received if you don't ask. There's nothing that you're going to find without seeking. There's no doors that are going to be opened without knocking. And I think it's interesting because I think as Christians, we have to ask ourselves the quick question, are we breaking natural law in our evangelism? We're expecting Samuel to be filled to the brim, but we don't ask. I couldn't ask, right? That would just be too much. Jesus asked. He asked. You know, do we break the law of sowing and reaping? And I understand that as New Testament Christians and in America, I'm not trying to say anything about the soil, but would I walk out in the field and say, I'm expecting a huge harvest, but I haven't planted a single seed? You know, it's kind of foolish if we think as New Testament Christians we can break natural law. And I think the application to us is, how can we get more seeds out into the world? How can we see the lost more? How can we stop for the lost more often? How can we speak to the lost more often? And Jesus, we can see, gives us many examples of creating these opportunities. Do we make time? Have you offered the invitation to those that are around you? To people that know you, and I'm talking about know you, not know Kyle, people that know you, do they know they have an open invitation to Sandyville? When's the last time that you reminded them of that? Hey, we'd love to have you at church. You can come anytime. If you plan on coming, please give me a call, because I would love to help you and assist you any way I can. Do people have an open invitation? Have you offered that open invitation? Let's look at that invitation, verse 8 and 9. It says that Zacchaeus, I guess I should pick up in verse 7. Verse 6, it says, so he made haste and came down and received him joyfully. Wait, Zacchaeus is accepting the invitation. It says, but when they saw it, they complained, saying, he has gone to be a guest with a man who is a sinner. The people criticizing them. It says, then Zacchaeus stood and said to the Lord, look, Lord, I give half of my goods to the poor, and I have taken anything, if I have taken anything from anyone by false accusation, I restore them fullfold. We see Zacchaeus trying to change his ways. Verse 9, it says, and Jesus said to him, today salvation has come to this house, because he also is the son of Abraham, for the Son of Man has come to seek and to save that which is lost. We see an invitation is given, and the invitation is received. But if the invitation doesn't make it to Zacchaeus, do you think he accepts it? How many people that you are connected to know they have an open invitation to Sandyville? Well, you said, I did 5 years ago. perhaps you need to invite them again. Perhaps you need to invite them again. You know, we work together as a family and a team. There's people that you will touch that I will never touch unless you get them here. There's people that I will touch in your lives that I will never touch. You are so special and so valuable. You know, your ripple in this pond of this world will touch people that I will never come into contact with. You are so valuable, so needed for the kingdom of God, so needed for the church. But will you have the same mission as Christ, to seek and save that which is lost? Do you have a target? If I ask you going out of the building this morning, do you have a target? Could you give me a name? Could you give me a name? Somebody for the next 2 months that you're going to give a concerted effort to see, to stop for. Stop for and pray for them. Stop for and talk to them. Stop for and try to build a relationship. Do you have somebody on your mind that you can target for these next 2 months? That you could see, that you could say. Perhaps it's somebody in your own family. Perhaps it's somebody that you work with. Do you have a target? Because it's hard to seek something that we haven't targeted. And I think Jesus had targets as he went through this life. Do you have a target? Who knows together what we can harvest if we work together and we sow and do not lose heart? I'm not saying that the United States is the best place to sow right now, but certainly our obligation is to sow. And sow all the more and not lose heart. There's a few things that are said in the Bible that certainly get me when it comes to evangelism. Number one, we find in Acts chapter 20, verses 26 and 27. And in Acts chapter 20, verses 26 and 27, it says, therefore I testify to you this day that I am innocent of the blood of all men, for I have not done to declare to you the whole counsel of God. You know, that's such a powerful statement. Basically, we have Paul there saying that he has a clear conscience. Why? Because he has done everything in his power to spread the gospel. He's done everything in his power to spread the gospel to those that are around him. And to be honest with you, I work on that each and every day. I work each and every day to try to keep my conscience clear. I am not a perfect individual. Not by a long shot. There are a lot of things I need to do much, much better, and I fall extremely short. There's no doubt about that. But I have a fight on my hands to keep my conscience clean. I want people in my life that I touch. I want them to know that I'm a Christian, and that I want them to be a Christian too. Could you say what Paul says? Therefore, I testify to you this day that I'm innocent of the blood of all men. I've done the best I can to spread the gospel. In Ezekiel chapter 33, it talks about a watchman. And it says the watchman will be guilty if the watchman doesn't blow the trumpet. If there's an enemy that attacks and the watchman doesn't blow the trumpet, the watchman is guilty. The watchman is supposed to watch over this. But then it says, you know what? The watchman who blows the trumpet when he sees the enemy who's coming and tries to warn everyone, that watchman is innocent. Are you seeking and saving that which is lost? You know, many times I'm preaching to myself. I know that there are individuals in my life that I need to talk to. Maybe I talked to them 4 years ago. that I need to talk to him again. Let him know that that invitation is just as good as the day I made it. Just as good as when Jesus says, Zacchaeus, I want to come to your house. Zacchaeus, salvation has come to your house. It's just as good today as it was 4 years ago. That invitation has not faded. And I'll remind you of it from time to time. You know, Jesus does some simple things here that I think is within all of our power. Jesus on that day saw the law. Can you see the law in your life? Jesus on this day, he stopped. Can you stop for those that need you to stop? And when you look and you think about it, Jesus offered an invitation. He offered an invitation. Can you see? Can you stop? Can you speak to those that are around you? Can you offer that invitation? Don't walk out of here without a target, because that's exactly what Satan wants you to do. He wants you to walk out of these doors and not think about the law. That's what he wants. He wants you to walk out this morning and just like try out, preach another lesson. You know, just preach another lesson. No big deal. He wants you to walk out of here and not have a target, somebody to seek, somebody to stop for, somebody to invite. You know, the church grew in the first century the same as it does today, one person at a time. We see that the church is added to by the Lord in Acts chapter 2, and that we see that these individuals, they heard the word, Acts chapter 2 and verse 38, we see that these individuals heard the word, and they repented and they were baptized for the remission of their sins. It says the Lord added to the church daily, such as were being saved. The church grows the same way now as it did in the first century. People hearing the gospel, believing it, repenting, confessing, and being baptized for the remission of their sins. Perhaps you need to become a New Testament Christian this morning. Perhaps you need to pray to the church. We'd love to help you in any way that we can. You come as we stand and as we sing.